Welcome to the Maine Reader on Maine Airs, the Maine Audio Information and Reading Service, a program of the IRIS Network, serving Maine's blind and visually impaired. My name is Cynthia Bowman, and I'm reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife. This is the diary of Dorothea Moulton Bellano, and it's edited by her son, James W. Bellano. Our last episode had the diarist Dorothea and her husband, Captain Fred, sailing south along the U.S. coast in hot weather. Dorothea is brushing up on some crude sea language, as well as celestial navigating, which her husband does not know. Life goes along. A doctor announces she is not pregnant. She does laundry, sews, reads. Meals take on importance. Humor remains available and important. The ship had just come to Jacksonville, Florida, as we were reading and finishing. Let's return to the summer of 1911. Friday, August 4th. Went from the anchorage to the dock this morning, but it did take forever, and we couldn't discharge ballast because it rained and poured so hard that no stevedores would work. Received a $25 dividend from Boston for my share in the vessel's recent profits. Isn't Fred too dear for words? I suppose so, but let me choose the words. One of our colored crew members got quite mouthy, and I see trouble on the horizon. All he needs is half a chance and perhaps a trip ashore to a rum shop. Cleaned the lamp chimneys, finished embroidering a pair of lovely panties, and wrote two letters. Feel enormously valiant and self-satisfied, as I hate those kinds of work. Sunday, August 6th, 1911. Church this morning, but only the songs were familiar, not the minister or the people, and it seems strange to go to a church where you don't see familiar faces, but that's a small price to pay for travel. I don't suppose I shall see many familiar faces at St. Peter's when we do get to Rome, and we shall, by golly. Am I tiring of roaming so soon? Do I want to settle down and gather moss and a few friends? The Herbs called and stayed on board for supper. They have a darling little girl baby who set me thinking. Cantaloupe for breakfast, and jiminy, wasn't it good? Monday, August 7th, 1911. My housework done by 8 a.m. Hot today. Fred has gone over town. Later, had the best day. Went on board the SS Algonquin of the Clyde line. Captain Charles Devereux of Castine, the gruff but gracious Captain Charles, showed us all about his passenger steamship, and I weakened just a bit in my determination to have Fred always stay and sail. Such lovely accommodations! Met two charming Southern belles, friends of the captain, and had the most delicious lunch with ice cream and lemonade. Met several Maine skippers and some of their wives at the Metropolitan. Of the seven vessels loading in the port, five are Maine schooners. The men talked of ships and shoes, and the women of sealing wax, while I sat by, making mental notes but wishing Jacksonville had a light opera or opera theater. Do I inherit the contrary streak that sent my ancestors continually away from civilization, always westward from Plymouth Colony, first to Vermont, then upstate New York, and then to Minnesota? Tuesday, August 8th, 1911. Housework, sewing, pressed Fred's clothes, made fudge. Letter from Betty Holbrook. She's still at home in Montana and not feeling well. Wish she had sense enough to buck up and be beautiful again. 1 p.m., Captain Dara of Maine for dinner and supper. We took him for a launch ride along the river in the evening. Stopped at the landing of the herb farm and saw their ostriches. Ugly birds, and made such queer noises. The Australians can have them. Wednesday, August 9th, 1911. I'd stay in Jacksonville so long as the delicious cantaloupes hold out. No longer. Shall I go to town or sew? Really, it's too hot to move. Went over town because tomorrow we shift to the loading dock, and that will give me a chance to iron and wash, because it's too far from the center of town and I would have to walk too far to the streetcar to get to town. Isn't that lovely thinking for getting out of work? Mrs. Erb called, without her ostriches. Her baby is a dear. Miss Foote came on board for tea and spent the evening under a magnificent moon. Aren't Florida watermelons good? Friday, August 11th, 1911. Towed down river to the lumber dock this morning. Towboat came at 5:30 a.m. We're loading for Beverly, Massachusetts, with a few thousand feet for Boston. The Beverly cargo is for building a wharf there. Letters galore. Linda Dayton sent the photos of Washington and Mount Vernon, those of the bark On Away, and the Kent's party in Ponce came out foggy. Sister Nettie wrote from Minneapolis, where she teaches tambien. She's a natural spinster, shooing away the men by lecturing to them. Two broken engagements already. When will she learn to stop? Had a lovely, unexpected little drive with my Freddy boy this morning out of Jacksonville to the upper country, where the alligators thrive and the palms are thicker than four in a bed. How I enjoyed it! Home on board to sew on my nightie, the new lace, and isn't it lovely? On board the sister ship to this one in the evening. Wonderful moon during the launch ride. Captain Hooper is very kindly. He used to take Fred on board as a boy. The old skipper has the square, strong hands of a sailor and the smilingest blue eyes one ever discovered behind tanned and crow's-footed eyelids. Saturday, August 12th, 1911. Uptown this morning and at home all p.m. Dreadfully hot. Fred says I complain of the heat only when there's no place to go. Read The Common Law and sewed on another new corset cover. All finished but the embroidery, which I started. Walked over to the Grand in the cool of the evening and took in some good moving pictures. Had ice cream afterwards and walked back aboard. My darling boy was a bit under the weather, but is getting better. Made fudge for him to gobble. He eats it with both hands. Sunday, August 13th, 1911. Thought I'd give the Presbyterians a look over this morning. Young minister, old songs. Home to read Ethan Frome by Mrs. Wharton in Scribner's. Do wish I could get all of the coming numbers and read the entire novel. Does bid to be good. New England supplies the local color, and God knows we Yankees have plenty of that. How's that for a transplanted farmer girl who has spent all of a week in Maine? But then this ship is but an extension of Herring Gut. Editor's note, until the late 1800s, Port Clyde was known as South St. George, and the village at the tip of the peninsula was on Herring Gut Harbor. Monday, August 14th. Wash clothes till hell won't have it. Raineth it always in Jacksonville? Oh, Lordy, how my back does ache. P.M., Fred uptown. I hate to think of the gossip relayed to us by some about a certain captain's wife. Makes a bad taste in my mouth, which even the cantaloupes and watermelons can't cancel. Hope it is not true. Our launch being repaired, and hope it's soon ready for evening cruises along the river. Thus we seafarers take our holidays. Tuesday, August 15th, 1911. More gossip. How could she possibly give herself to the mate? Is her husband blind, or does he drink? What a shame, and what a bad thing for the reputation of the profession, where most of the wives are wonderful. Washed clothes again today, and ironed until it tired me furiously. Then for a launch ride in the evening, and took along Captain Farrar. The pilot boat stopped us to inspect, but we had the required rules on board the launch. Several launches have been fined. Wednesday, August 16th. Sick in bed all morning. Fred called a doctor, and woe is me, they made yours truly get up. No rest for the wicked, pain or no pain. Heigh-ho, the pleasant launch ride in the afternoon was good medicine, and better was the long one at eventide down to where the High J. Smith is anchored in the stream below town. The Moors were not on board, so we went on board Captain Darrah's vessel to see his good pictures of ports, ships, and his fine family. Home to lemonade, and so to bed. Friday, August 18th, 1911. Ironed yesterday and sick today, or is it sick of ironing? First real bust-up with Fred, and of today's events, the shouting, the pettiness, the empty anger, which I shall never forget. Nothing will be said, but I'll not forget if I live to be 1,000 years, says Fred, among other things. You're soldiering. That's sea talk for loafing, says I. I didn't sign on for being a Chinese laundry. Is it the heat that's getting you, Fred darling, the darling with disgust on my gritting teeth, or is it drinking? Damn it, you know I don't drink. Sipping, then, I smell it. You're some old educated smart, ain't you? That's medicine you smell. Some call it that, says I. He was furious and went into the virtues of several mollies, a Mary and 2 or 3 unknown trollops, whose backs are apparently stronger than their minds. If all you want is your clothes ironed and your sex appetite satiated, then bring aboard one of your Boston dollies and I'll pack my bag. I'll bet she won't be able to navigate outside of the bunk. Say sheet, what in hell is that? Don't go showing off in front of me. And so on, until he said something that made me laugh. You couldn't be sick if you tried. You're just lazy as hell when we're in port. That's just fine for a sailor's girl. Then, of course, I felt worse for having needled him, and when he called the doctor, I broke down at his great love for me. Monday, August 21st, 1911. If all goes well, I shall sit up mañana. Am now enjoying the lovely grapes my darling husband brought me. Today came a bundle of Portland papers to read this evening. Kaiser Bill seems bound and determined to force a war by building a stronger navy than the British. Tuesday, August 22nd. Sat up while Fred made my bed. Aren't clean sheets a luxury? Wrote Sister Nettie. Read the best polo match story in the American magazine. Wonder if Fred would like it. I'll probably have to read it to him. He doesn't like to read anything but charts. Wednesday, August 23rd. Up on my feet and now tending Fred's rheumatism, which sometimes cripples him. Ship Chandler left a note to call his office, 44744. I went up the dock and rang up. The operator said, "Fo-fo-seven-fo-fo, right smart of fools, lawsy mercy, honey child." The message was that Captain Darrah wanted to visit us, which he did with some so-called poetry written by 2 girls he and Mrs. Darrah took for a trip at sea. Ask me not in mournful numbers of my passage on the sea. Ask me not if I was seasick. Such words don't sound good to me. For that effort, I'd give an 8th grader a flunking mark. Guess I'll have to stop encouraging such exhibitions as I may do with speaking, so that the sea captains know I manage to go beyond 7th grade. When they discover that I like poetry, they bring me doggerel. From the other sea captains, all suffering from rheumatism, like Fred, I've run a pseudo-scientific research questioning, and the results may be that they can no longer justifiably blame it on the weather. I believe their rheumatism results from their extremely high salt intake. Seamen eat salt, fish, salt, pork, corned beef, and oodles of canned food, which has high sodium content. They breathe salt, bathe in salt, and cover their food with it, even when no salt is necessary. Shall I write my theory to John Hopkins? No, better wait until I determine how Fred does after I've hidden the salt shaker. had the cook boil the salt out of the fish, pork, and beef, and am trying to convert him to eating rice. That'll take some doing, my daughter. He loves salt. Even says that when he retires to that illusory and damnable farm, he will salt away his earnings. A layer of $1 bills, a layer of salt, and so on until the barrel's full and topped with salt. My pseudo-scientific endeavors have been otherwise diverse during this stay in Jacksonville, stimulated by finding out that the captain I've been calling Darrow, D-A-R-R-O-W, spells his name Dara, D-A-R-R-A-H. Then we met a Mr. Tolliver, whose name is spelled, lo and behold, T-A-L-I-A-F-E-R-R-O. The Down East Delanos are called Dilno, D-I-L-N-O. The Bolanos name is pronounced Blaino, B-L-A-I-N-O. Why can't these Easterners forget their English heritage with its notorious disdain for spelling? Imagine getting Chumley out of C-H-O-M-O-N-D-E-L-E-Y. It's as bad as Worcester from W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R and Gloucester from G-L-O-U-C-E-S-T-E-R. All this by way of having heard that Captain Dara's rheumatism, salt intake, has finally caught up with him, and he's to be shipped home while a new skipper is being sent down from Maine to sail the Lewiston home. Sunday, September 3rd, 1911. To sea at last, praise the Lord! Am I ever fed up with the picayune peccadillos of the stay in this gunk hole? Won't the sea breezes refreshingly blow away the cobwebs? Oh, a few retrieving episodes did happen to take the curse away. Fred's Uncle Sid Hupper of Herring Gut and skipper of a big schooner came on board with a large bundle of Rockland couriers, got myself the new Scribner's and Outlook, wore my pongee dress to church, where the young minister read my thoughts by quoting, "The mills of the gods grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly small, though with patience stands he waiting, with exactness grinds he all." Had egg and wine one lunchtime, my precious darling husband got more and more affectionate, which mood usually precedes a fight. Many women wonder why that happens, but I can be true to my diary and tell exactly why. It's simply that the husbands are leading up to copulating, and with that they'd like a little bit of this and that, lacking which they get nasty and start a battle. He even went so far as to tell me I might not make the forthcoming trip to Rio de Janeiro. Come hell and high water, I'll be in Rio for Christmas, and he can battle all the way. Captain, oh my captain, if that be mutiny, make the most of it. 8 beautiful oysters, large and pink and white, while towing down the river. And the farewell gift of potted hydrangeas is lovely enough to dispel my wrath. The lumber people paid Fred for 2 days' demurrage. Editor's note, demurrage is a delay beyond charter party time stipulations. Please God, no hurricane, for this is the season when they blow poor ships astray and sink them. But at least they provide wind, and that's what we want, up to a point. And if anyone can take advantage of the wind before the eye of the hurricane makes sailing impossible, it's Freddy Boy, the sailor who says an ancestor of his showed Noah how to knot a rope yarn. Past the SS Cretan, merchants and miners in bay. Monday, September 4th, 1911. Wind failed last night and had to anchor. Towed down this morning by the tug, Biscayne, as the Three Friends was broken down a bit more than usual. Washed! How hungry I get since following Fred's foolish prescription of turpentine and castor oil. Believe you me, I shall get a doctor's manual when we reach Boston, right out of the Harvard Medical School, put a stop to his doctoring with nostrums. Shall I get a new gown and long coat in Boston, or a suit and silk waist? Am I going to be seasick with the confounded turpentine and castor oil? I never have been seasick, and that's one reason I'm here, poor Betty. Wonder if I should tell Harvard, if they balk on the manual, that my ancestors, both Moulton and Brewster, helped found the damnedly noble institution. Wednesday, September 6, 1911. A beautiful sou'east breeze today. Fred Lame, bedousing his Florida celery in salt, and I embroidering on deck. Cloudy today, and just a day for soogieing. Editor's note, washing with soap powder. The after cabin, soogieing the after cabin, which is what the sailors are doing. I see from the Saturday Evening Post that while my back was turned, New Mexico became a state. President Taft has vetoed their attempt to provide recall of undesirable officials, says the Post, in an overly righteous lecture down to the Westerners, who, it is said, are called by Easterner sons of the braying jackass. Thursday, September 7th, 1911, off Cape Fear. A squall upset a bucket of green paint atop the house, and that makes Fred happy, because the sailors were running out of work. My blue drawn dress is ready to wear again, but shan't put it on until we have passed fearful Cape Hatteras. Fred washed the cabin overhead, groaning all the time with his aches and pains, while I lectured him on soldiering. That's what kept him going, with a grin between groans. Ironed and pressed Fred's clothes in the galley, where there's plenty of hot water, and finished sewing on little sister Myra's surprise pillow. Very pretty. Had a beautiful sunset of opal and pale blue. Just a weather breeder, says Fred, while we were strolling fore and aft in the lee of the house, as though we were doing the Strand in London town. Saturday, September 9th. Only light airs for 2 days, and how this ship did roll fiendishly and pitch diabolically, so one could hardly sleep. Undoubtedly and with absolute certainty, we are near Hatteras. No charts or lights or lightships are necessary to ascertain that fact, just the movement of the ship as the shoal meets the deep. The Gulf Stream protests the long shallows, and the trades battle the westerlies into a contrary draw of winds, which are calm 1 minute and squally the next. Began on a linen pillow for Mother B. Fred finished varnishing the cabin walls and deck. The sea became calm during the evening and threateningly beautiful. Sunday, September 10th, 1911. Calm, calmer, calmest. We make no money this way, but 'twas perfectly heaven when the slight breeze started about noon, and I am glad to have the rest and do some letters. Began Saracenaria by F. Marion Crawford, and isn't it splendid? His characters are well drawn, strong, and vital. Fred went to bed early with pain, and I made him take aspirin. I read until the duel took place, and went to sleep with nightmares, and Fred too, of course. Isn't it lovely to have one's own man to hold when the going is not too good, especially when there are four in the bed, Fred, his pain, my nightmare, and me. Monday, September 11th, 1911. Very calm and when came a fair wind for Nantucket, which is still over 400 miles north by east. Gray, chilly, northern sky, such as leadened Betty and me just out of sunny Puerto Rico over a year ago. Wonder if the dear child is snapping out of it, writing her life, and, I hope, teaching amongst a flood of eligible beaux. She wouldn't have made it with this one, not tough enough. Just had some grape juice and egg for breakfast, but are they ever good together? Fred missed morning sights, said, I'll trust you. Let the mate take sights, too. His won't be any good, but you can compare them with yours. The mate was all thumbs, handling the delicate sextant, as though scared of it. He puts us somewhere up in the Alleghenies. Hard sailing up there, said Fred, when I took him the results. Reminds me of the drunken fisherman of Matinic, who couldn't stand numbers, couldn't count, came home to the mainland one night to sell his lobsters, and thought he'd climb in bed with his wife for a change. Drunk, he pulled up the blanket, no sheets, of course, and counted 6 feet. Thought something was wrong. Jumped out on the floor and counted only 4 feet. Hopped back in and said, 4 feet, that's all there should be. Is that another Down East lie? Tuesday, September 12th, 1911. Still, yet and evermore. Ironed, starched, washed companionway. Damn them all! Finished that splendid Saracineria by Crawford, who is not a lazy writer like me. He knows history, and is a consummate handler of vital characters. I want to read his next, Sant'Ilario. Wednesday, September 14th, 1911. Alas and alack for human hopes! Had a lively sou'west wind last evening, just where it should be, which promised to get us in within a few days. But in the night there blew up a raging nor'easter, chasing the sou'wester back to the gulf and us off our course. And here we are somewhere between Greenwich and Hawaii, God knows where. Just tacked ship to get back on course for Nantucket, but not doing too well, close hauled. Past 2 6-masters, southbound, and a steamer, which shows we are in the right direction for Nantucket lightship. Fred put his whole palm on the chart and said, we're near here. Too overcast for sights, so we'll navigate, by guess and by God, until the sun pops out. Fred's hand covers nearly 200 miles radius. That's all we have time for in this edition of The Maine Reader. We're reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, The Diary of Dorothea Moulton Bellano, edited by her son James. I'm Cynthia Bowman. Thank you for listening.